DJ, drop a beat.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
What the hell is wrong with you people?
Not another podcast.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
James.
I am sick and tired of everyone telling me I'm confused.
Bryce.
We're reckless, arrogant, stupid dicks.
Big Jim.
Wubba-lubba-dub-dub. That's my catchphrase, remember?
Samantha.
I have one job on this lousy ship. It's stupid, but I'm gonna do it, okay?
Dan.
I don't know who you are, but I have a very particular lack of skills. I will never be able to find you.
Not another podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Not Another Podcast. I'm Samantha. And
I'm
with
Big
me,
Jim.
As always, is these jackasses.
Yeah, and that would be me, Dan.
I would be jackass number one.
Oh, jackass number one. I see how you promoted yourself amidst the jackassery.
You guys
and the original jackass,
names.
Big Jim.
Well, no one can top you, buddy.
OGJA.
Is that a compliment?
Being the OGJA, I don't know.
In certain
we can
parts
make it
of
one.
The country, yes.
Right, right. Jeff, do you get kicked in for that? Or jumped in, rather?
It's blood in, blood out.
Is jackass
out.
One word or two words?
Uno.
In some parts of the country.
I don't know. It depends. If your name is Jack, then you're just an ass. But
yeah, we just call it ass.
We just call him ass. What's his real name? Jack.
It's pronounced Jackies.
Jackies.
It's French.
Jacques. Jacques.
Like Dumas.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Dumbass, remember that commercial?
Uh-huh.
Well, Mr. Dumbass, I want this job, and I'm tell you why, Mr. Dumbass.
It's pronounced Dumas. Dumas.
I am dumbass material through and through.
I knew it. I mean, surrounded by dumbasses.
So, Sam.
I'm surrounded by assholes.
What are we doing today? Seeing how you got the reins of the show.
I don't know. I'm not 100%. So one of the topics that I was thinking of was because I am so massively unhappy at work, I wanted to talk about, like, different mindsets and different jobs and sort of how to get through a job that you have zero passion for or care for, so that way you can eventually go off and do what it is you want to do, which is what I am currently trying to do. But I'm, like, losing my mind.
Fair enough. Well, so how does people, normal jack-offs, get through the daily grind by using mental manipulation upon themselves in order to cope with everyday's bullshit? Am I understanding correctly?
Well, I think, yeah, pretty much, because I think that like mentally manipulating yourself only works for so long. And then there's one day where the wall is just pulled away and you just see everything for what it is. And then you have a brief existential crisis because eternity's coming and you have no, you're sitting there in a beige office wasting every day. And now, and that's not to say that it's not a valid thing to do. If your goal is to, if you want to be a corporate cog, if this is what you want to do, you want to manage people, you want to be in a business, cool, you're living your passion, you're living your dreams, do what you want to do. Just because it's a waste of time for me does not mean it's a waste of time for anyone else.
It sounds like a bit more than a question of how to lie to oneself to get through. This sounds almost like a strong desire to just not be where you are. And don't get me wrong, I have a feeling every single one of us has gone through that same mental process. And also,
I feel like Jim can speak to this better than most.
Probably. And in the idea that tempting eternity and, you know, worrying about what mark you make on the planet before you die is definitely something I think we've touched on before.
Jim, you've had
a lot of shit jobs. This is more for it's more of self-satisfaction. Like, self-fulfillment.
We're all into
versus
self-gratification.
Yeah. I mean, I'm good at self-gratification, but just not in this format.
Fair enough.
Jim, you've had a lot of shit jobs. How do you cope through the daily grind?
Well, I'll tell you what not to do. Drinking at work really does not bode too well.
I feel as there's a story there.
However,
I really
you know,
wish that was a joke, but...
I would feel that would be a number one way to get out of said job.
I can actually back this up.
I would say to do a more healthy exercise would be to, in essence, kind of create a vision board for that which it is that you are striving to do, so that your crappy beige office does not become the four walls of the coffin that you sort of project yourself into working in until the day you actually, they just fold those walls around you and then shove you in the ground. Take all the things that you want, that you're passionate about, and kind of put them into some kind of a collage, if you will, so that you can pull that up and look at it and use that as a motivational factor, as opposed to just kind of looking around.
I do keep now I've fallen away from it the last couple weeks, but I was really good. I need to get back to it. I do keep a manifestation journal.
Okay.
Which is essentially the same thing, only you're writing it down instead of using visuals.
Well, I would say in the situation that you're in, because it is so, I mean, just looking around, you know, your surroundings and having that, having some kind of an oasis, that is a visual. I mean, the writing it down is good for getting it out of your head, but to sort of to be able to see that as an actual, you know, thing, I think would be as healthy, because it's a reminder that this place does exist, that there is, you know, a hope beyond the fucking rainbow, as opposed to just standing there in the puddle of the, like, the fucking Sin City slum that you seem to feel like you're, you know, you're mired in.
That might be funner than an office job there, Jim. The Sin City
slum. That might be
slum.
What?
You could have a little bit more fun there, I think.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're, you know, if you have a purpose, but if you're just sort of like laying in the gutter waiting, you know, for that final bottle of whiskey or that, you know, that runaway truck to hit you and just put you out of your misery.
Right.
It's just...
Oh, sorry, Jim.
No, go ahead.
The one thing I would say, you know, as far as daily grinds are concerned, you know, I mean, they call it that for a reason, because it grinds down on your resilience, your ability to remind yourself of why you're doing it in the first place, why you're here, you know. And unfortunately, a lot of the times for me, particularly, you know, I work the industrial job in a no-window cell, and that perpetually beats the ever-living shit out of my body. But when it starts breaking into my head and starts, you know, eating away at my ability to remind myself, hey, I'm doing this because I got a decent apartment, you know, I got a wife who really needs my insurance as well as myself kind of need it, you know, stuff like that. And just reminding myself of those small little things, when I forget about how to remind myself on doing that is when it becomes the hardest to get up and go, oh, fuck. And I understand that because, again, going to my job, it's physically demanding like crazy, but more so than that, it's mentally strenuous, because I work with a giant load of jackasses who, you know, for the most part seem to think they're God's gift to creation in and of itself. And my big issue is, you know, a lot of the times their great ideas are fucking stupid, but the thing about it is that I always have to remind myself is, like, for me, one of the good exercises I use is to remind myself of the jobs I've had before that were much worse, and the pay grade that I had with associated bad jobs that was even worse. And, I mean, I try to assess it by damage planning, or basically putting myself through the mental gauntlet of remembering how fucking horrendous some of the jobs I had worked before were, and how much better this one is in and of itself, you know, just whether... Like, McFarland's, for instance, is always my number one go-to. It was outside, surrounded by bark dust and compost, smelled like shit, 12-hour days, had to ride my bike to and from work, and that was a 10-mile trek. It was misery. Pure misery. And I think about that, and I go, you know, I'm at least air-conditioned. My clothes don't smell like butthole every day when I go home. I don't have to ride a bike anymore because I can afford a car. I mean, small things like that will kind of remind you of why it is you do this daily grind. And when it comes to your passions that you're getting into, or the things you want to pursue, for me, you know, making guitars or making music is highly important to me, but that's stuff I can do when I'm at home after I get off work. My day, as I tell my coworkers, doesn't actually start until 2:30 when my foot hits the pavement going to my car. That's when my day starts. All this other bullshit, it's just a time period that if I was off work, I probably would have slept through 90% of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And I definitely agree, because those are a lot of coping tools that I use as well. Because, yeah, I have a decent paying job, and I just applied for another department that's going to pay me even more. And my friend, you know, so it's just, oh boy, if I get the position. But, right. You know, it's just my boss's boss wants to do the whole, take me under a wing, make me a manager thing. And I'm like, get the hell away from me. I can't stand this, because I'm taking over from my boss for 2 weeks. I cannot stand it. Oh my God. My brain just does not work this way. And, you know, all the reporting, like, this just solidified the fact, and I've managed people. I have been a manager before, and I'm fine with it. When it comes to certain career fields, this one, no, screw all of this. It solidifies the fact I do not want to go higher in this company, because it's not what I want to be doing. And it further solidifies how little I care about any of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. And when you reach that level of not care, it's really hard to pull yourself back from that ledge. So I'm hoping, like, once my manager's back and I can be like, take all this shit back, I'm not doing this again, that it'll, you know, I can go back to, you know, not.
That's if your manager comes
out
back
every day. Yeah, I know. He's like traipsing around Europe for 2 weeks with his brothers. And I'm like, you're not coming back. I lived in Europe for 5 years. You're not coming back.
I would never if I didn't have to.
If he doesn't come back, I've already decided that I'm going to tell my boss's boss, I'm not taking over. You're going to find someone else. I will do none of these responsibilities anymore.
Now, just out of curiosity, Sam, have you ever actually told your boss's boss how you actually feel about this whole thing? Or has it always been one of those things where you're not necessarily afraid, but concerned about voicing it truthfully in its entirety?
Definitely concerned about voicing it truthfully, because opportunities will be taken away.
Right.
I mean, I won't be fired or anything, because, dear God, you have to try so hard to get fired. So, but, you know, I take pride in myself as a human being and doing a good job. You're paying me to do work. I'm going to do the work, and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. Doesn't mean that I care about it, but I'm still going to do it.
Right.
But just the ridiculousness. And I don't do office politics. I'm not going to play these games with you. I do not care. This does not mean anything to me. But people try to goad you into playing these games.
You got to
play just a little
though.
Bit. Yes, I know. Fuck.
Feel liberated in the fact that you've reached the point of not giving a shit, but your competency is still that higher to where you can actually do your job and not give a shit. And that's the best way to do it. Because honestly, I mean, like, for my job, it's a little bit easier. I don't have to manage people. I just literally have to do manual labor. So at one point or another, I told my boss, nothing personal, chief. This place just needs to stay standing for 30 fucking years. I don't give a shit how that happens. And rest assured, I will be no part of the upper management at any point, because you guys are fucking stupid for doing the job that you do. You volunteer for 70, 80-hour weeks, and we still don't get any more parts through because you guys are salary non-exempt and you don't touch parts. My job, push it through. That's what I do. I don't give a shit about the politics. I don't give a shit about who's the upper lead's bad day is. When they come back to my area, if they're in a bad mood, unfortunately, I've gotten to the point in my company where I have a bad habit of telling them, hey, quit being a pissy little bitch and get the fuck out of my area. I got work to do. And the nice thing is I'm at the bottom.
Like, it's like Fight Club.
Well, yeah, because it's like I'm at the bottom of the pile. So basically my thought process is they need me, as much as I know they probably wouldn't openly admit it, because I'm still one of the highest producing framers we've had in a long time, and I still continually do that. But other than that, that's all I'm here for. And if they think that I'm here for anything more than that, they're kidding themselves. And I'm always the first one to tell them, yeah, good fucking luck with that. Yeah. My bosses have now gotten to the point where they stop asking me for overtime because I just say no. Sorry.
Right now I'm at I'm with our sister group within our company. So I'm working on a different application now. But the previous application and the previous manager I had was really, I really miss working for him. He knew and understood that this is not where I wanted to be. But he also knew that I do good work. And he never, ever took an opportunity away from me. He gave me challenging things to do. You know, he always gave me support. He was, you know, I really, really like him as a manager. And now we have a new, we have new higher bosses, and our even higher boss just left the company. So who knows what's, you know, what's happening. So, you know, we're kind of worried as to what's going to change now. Who's, you know, what jackass is going to take this place? Because I really liked that guy, and I'm just, ugh. But
breaking in a new manager sucks ass, no matter when it is.
Oh, I know. And, like, I should be used to it being in the military. You know, you move 7 years, you move around. People come and go every year, every 2 years, you know, so there's constant change. That's cool. But there's also so much more of a sense of camaraderie when it comes to the military. I think, like, a lot of civilian, like, I've been now been out as long as I was active duty.
Gotcha.
As of this year. And that, I hate that fact. But, oh, well, life moves on. But I'm like,
do the people that you work with, Samantha, know that you're trained to kill? I think that might help a couple problems.
Might be a good thing to put on your next resume, you know, when you move up.
If maybe adorning your office.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can adorn your office or your cube or whatever it is, wherever it is that you work, maybe with like a jaunty necklace made of human ears. These are things that tell people to go the fuck away and let you do what you do.
Nice.
On my desk, I have like stuffed animal. I have little plush Freddy Krueger. I have a plush Pennywise. I have this little set of Pennywise and Georgie and Bill. So people already know I'm weird.
Well, maybe if those plushies were holding human teeth that
right.
you've taken
real
from the mouths of your dead enemies.
Teeth. Yes. You know, put a real stamp
so
on it.
So instead of a stress ball, I'm just playing with teeth.
Yeah, just juggle them around a little bit. I've been told you can tell the future if you, you know,
put
shake them around just
and
right.
Gnaw on them for the marrow.
Yeah, and just let your coworkers hear the crunch. Yeah, it's like a gobstopper. Like, you just have to get through the shell, and that's all soft on the inside.
Yeah, that's true.
No, there's a difference between being the weird coworker or the weird chick in the office and the terrifying one that's a ticking time bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Those two people, I mean, like, because, yeah, they see the plush thing, like, oh, that's kind of cute. Maybe they want to come over, maybe play with the little Freddy Krueger. But if they see something that they're not quite sure whether or not that's human remains, then they're just like, yeah, you just keep walking quickly when you get to where her office door is. You don't want to get pulled into that tractor beam.
Maybe on your lunch break, you bring your rifle in, disassemble it, blindfold yourself.
Right, reassemble it.
See how fast you can.
Or just bring in, like, the barrel and just clean it all day long. Just let everybody see you just polish the shit out of that barrel. And then the next day, bring
or
in
better,
the trigger mechanism. And just let them know that you have all the pieces.
Better yet, because, I mean, bringing a firearm into work, that could raise a couple of red flags. This is something that you can do that's along those lines and isn't as terrifying. Get, like, a chessboard. And put it on your desk, but instead of all the pieces, have, like, you know, shotgun shells and 22s and 45 different calibers to represent the different pieces.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, you got my buckshot. Damn it.
And then get, like, a Sharpie and write the names of your coworkers on each of the pieces.
That might, that's almost as good of an idea as drinking at work there, Jim, I think.
You know, here's an idea. Why don't you get yourself a Nerf gun? And
just peeing people.
And yeah, shoot people's objects off their desk from across the office.
Mm-hmm. And
blow the mythological smoke off the barrel. Just so they know that had it been a real gun,
yeah.
You could take them out from any angle.
And then, you know, blow the imaginary smoke away from the barrel just to let them know.
And then slowly sink behind the divider between your cube and the other cubes.
With the death stare.
Yeah, just locking eyes with
and
him.
And the two fingers to the point, you know, just before you drop. Mm-hmm.
mouth words headshot as you slowly fall out of view.
All of these are valid things to do. Because I'm just picturing like with the chessboard like bullet, you know, with the shells, you know, just when someone says something that pisses me off, just stare at them blankly, unblinking, and just be like, noted. And then without breaking eye contact, pick up the shell and write their name on it and put it back.
And then knock it over. Just to
but move very slowly and very deliberately, so that way. But you got to maintain that eye contact because they'll be too afraid to break it.
Uh-huh.
And, but they'll be so freaked out, and then it'll give them nightmares.
Right?
Oh, someone, see, here's what I would do.
A little
if someone
psychological
pissed me
trauma.
Off, I would take my Nerf gun with the. Got to have the suction cup darts, otherwise it doesn't work. And you sneak through the cubicles. Until you're right behind them, and you shoot it so it goes right by their ear and lands right on their monitor. And then when they turn around, you just lock eyes with them, slowly put the gun away, turn around and walk away. So they know!
And on that was a warning. Yeah, on that Nerf dart, just write warning shot.
Right?
Before you leave, you could be like, you can keep that.
Hang on to that dart.
I missed on
so program. You know, you only get one of these, and then just that's it.
Maybe that's what you write on the side. Warning shot, you only get one.
Limit one per victim.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in the military, we had in our bullpen when I was in radio, we had it was a big wide area. And we all had our desks, and so we could all turn around in like a big circle or square and talk stuff out, like new segments and shit like that. And we had various Nerf weapons around the office.
Nice.
So there was like a Nerf battle axe, there was a Nerf sword, there were some knives, there was Nerf guns, and they were just strewn about. They would rotate here and there, and then every now and then, it was always a different person. We would go, someone would go, Nerf fight! And then for like a minute, we would just beat the crap out of each other with Nerf. And then it would be over, and we'd go back to work.
Now there is some good therapy.
I miss them so much.
Just beating the shit out of your coworkers with a Nerf sword. Now that is something I wish I could do with
I've
my bosses
heard this story,
and the engineers.
A couple of times, and I really wish that I could get my bosses to agree. There's a company, Jim, you know these guys, at Digital Trends.
Oh, yeah, Digital Trends.
Yeah, so the boss at this company had a Nerf gun, and he would just randomly, once in a while, step out of his office, shoot someone, and go back in his office. It started pissing everyone off, so they wrote to Nerf and explained the situation, and Nerf sent them a huge shipment of all kinds of different guns and just tons That's of darts. Awesome. It became a full-on battleground for like a month until someone went, okay, you all have to take your Nerf guns home. No work is getting done. But I think it would be great to just have... But in this day and age, you can't do that because then it's like everyone freaks out. But I would love to just... Someone just irritate you.
Just right in the head.
Just go over to their cubicle, pop one off, and walk away.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it doesn't kill them.
No.
But they know that you're on their shit list.
Right. Quit fucking around.
Like, I thought that they used to do stuff in like corporate environments where they would have like paintball weekends that were supposed to like. You
oh
know,
yeah, there used to be team building exercises.
You think
and everything
you do
like that
for people at my level? No.
Back when they decided, you know, that employees mattered and team building was important.
Yeah.
Nowadays they're like, you know, we really got to work hard, guys. We got to try really hard. We're doing pretty good, but
well,
next quarter we got a lot more coming. So you know, step it up.
The economic crash. Back in '07, '06, that's what killed that.
Honestly, it's just a lot of the times, like my company, for instance, once they became a major corporation and wasn't under the rule of, you know, the original owner, once it became a corporation, that's when all the employee benefits really started to take a dive. A lot of the time it... Like, because when I started in there, I used to hear stories from people who had been there 20, 30 years about the good old days. And granted, some of that shit was dangerous as fuck. Like, you know, Jim, how you were saying drinking at work? Yeah, well, apparently back in the good old days, they would go to their lunch break at the bar, have a couple of beers, and then mosey back whenever the fuck they felt like it and get back to work. Not smart, especially around heavy machinery, but I get it. But it was one of those things where, yeah, ever since we became a corporation, a lot of the employee benefits that used to be there are no longer. And that's kind of the nature of the beast, though. You know, once a company gets too big, it no longer becomes a family. It becomes a machine.
Yeah, and it used to be a situation where hard work was rewarded and you got promoted and you had an incentive to work harder. Now it's, you know, do the work that you're supposed to and all this other stuff that really should be done by somebody else. And if you don't like it, then you'll be replaced by somebody that will pay less and get even more responsibility.
Oh, that's exactly where we're at right now. And the one thing that really ticks me off, and I notice this even in the military, it's just, you know, the harder you work, the more they're going to give you to do.
Yep.
So if you're good at what you do, you get little to no praise, and you're told, okay, you know, you get to do your work and the slacker's work and the boss's work and this, that, and the other. But the slacker does one good thing, and it's they're praised like they just cured cancer.
Right.
And it's like, what?
Dan had a name for that, but it's failing upwards. It's usually how we get, you know, herp the derp managers and people of that sort is because they have literally done the bare minimum, but they've done it in such a visible way to the upper management that they think they're awesome, and then they end up getting more responsibility than they can actually handle or mentally, you know, wrap their head around. So they end up being, you know, just derpy.
Well, but, and here's the other thing, too, and you guys all have kind of touched on it. Corporate America, in the last 20 years, the greed of America has gotten so out of hand, mm-hmm. and the heads of corporations are so greedy that there's no rewarding employees because it's all about their bottom line. How much can I give to myself? That's why there's now a 1% in America. That's why there's so much more poverty. There's so much more, I won't even call it middle class because there's no middle class anymore. There's the uber rich, and then there's guys like you and me who are scraping just
even,
enough
just
to get by.
Yeah. And again, that's the thing. It's like a lot of the times these thought processes are the ones that really start to hammer home the existential dread that I would get when I go to work in the mornings. And a lot of the times... I know it sounds really silly, but most of the time when I feel this way, I tend to think of things that I look forward to, things that I'm actually excited about. And then while I'm at work, I can basically just allow my mind to drift because a lot of what I do is, after a certain point, you really don't have to think too much. You just get it done. So it's a matter of I've gotten to the point now where I can literally project myself into the job I wish I could be in. You know, playing music is one thing, but honestly, that's one that's kind of hard to project while you're actually at work. For me, making instruments of the sort, that's something I think about in full detail. So I'll actually go through the ideas in my head of, okay, well, how would I taper this edge? How would I carve this into the face of the guitar? Okay, what tools am I going to use? What paints am I going to use afterwards? You know, how am I going to stain it? And every finite detail I can possibly think of, to the point where I stop thinking about where I am and why I'm there. And a lot of the times that eases it for a while. It does eventually come back round, but a lot of the times I can drift into that and it helps me move forward. Because again, if we let ourselves fall down these black pits of despair, there really is no getting out naturally without trying to, you know, actually change your thought process. I mean, if you know you're in that place, the only thing you can do at that point, again, because none of us have access to cheap psychiatric care or, you know, cheap medications to help with this, a lot of the times it comes down to our ability to go, okay, shit's fucked up. I'm in a bad fucking mood. I cannot stand these assholes. Man, I can't wait for Game of Thrones Season 8. You know, I think about stuff like that. Just stupid shit to look forward to. Because eventually, once you start thinking about the small things that you're looking forward to, you start looking forward to the bigger things you look forward to. And then it makes everything seem a bit more palatable. Now, I'm not saying that this is the best way to go. I'm just saying this is how I cope with my day-to-day. Because, again, a lot of what I do, you know, I look at the situation as it is. If I keep up with the job that I'm in for another 20 years, I probably won't be able to play music by the end of it. And let alone build guitars. Or let alone work, for that matter, because it will have completely destroyed my wrists, my back, and every other part of me, for that matter. But it's those are the thought processes that lead down a very, very dark path to make every day so much more of a struggle. And for me, all I can do is look forward to the things I want to do and do the best I can to try to do them now, which is why I'm building guitars now on my free mm-hmm. time, why I'm, you know, in a band with this jackass. Because
why'd you point to Jim like that?
Well, because I really wanted him, but I accepted you. but it's like, but that's, you know, and that's what I work for. That's all that I work for, is to try to do these things. And then, you know, the time I spend with my wife, I want her to not be stressed about money. I want her to enjoy everything that we possibly can. All the wonderful creature comforts of, you know, living in this wonderful capitalist society allows me that freedom to say, hey, you know, I'm going to be able to pay the bills this week. I'm going to be able to have a little extra. Let's go out for dinner. Let's go watch Infinity Wars. You know, whatever it may be. Those are things that remind me, okay, I have to drudge through this bullshit for 8 hours. Actually, 8.5, because I don't get paid for lunch. So 8.5 hours every single day. Let's just fucking get through it so we can look forward to the rest of our day when it actually gets started. So, yeah, that's my shtick. Enjoy.
Yeah, it's this, you know, the way that work exists now, you know, the idea of, like, you know, well, if you chase your dream, you know, if you just work hard enough at it, that, you know, one day you'll somehow find a way to make it happen. And for some, it does happen. But more often than not, people will just work and you know, dedicate so much of their life and time to it that it either becomes unrealistic or they just run out of time trying to acquire it as a reliable source of income. And so they end up just sort of settling for something else, or, you know, it's so infuriating. You know, I'm right now in the process of trying to go into, like, a trade school so I can learn how to have some other kind of marketable skill, like welding or, you know, carpentry or something along those lines. Because, you know, I again, much like Danny was just saying, like, I don't want to, 10 or 20 years down the road, be so broken down that I can't do anything. Have to work until I literally fall over dead, and then they just sort of, you know, cart my carcass out the back door and pull a lever, and somebody else kind of steps into the fold.
They would have, you know, used a push broom, buddy.
Yeah, well, but yeah, it's so depressing to think that, you know, it feels like there's no way out. And
yeah, oh yeah, you're definitely, you feel trapped, and I don't like the feeling trapped portion.
Yeah.
And, like, every moment I'm at work, not writing, wishing I'd rather be writing. And I can't just let my mind wander at my job all the time. Like, I have to be actively engaged in things. And every moment I'm not, it's another minute wasted that I could be doing something else that matters to me.
Yeah.
And that, just waiting for the seconds, minutes, hours to tick by when I can get the hell out of there.
Well, if it helps, something to remind yourself of is time slows down for absolutely no one, nor does it speed up. So it's one of those things where you will always have consistency in your day, no matter how shitty it is, that the time will go just as fast on a good day as it does on a bad day, which may or may not be helpful, but for the most part,
it's still... Yeah, and in my mind, it's still wasted time. So it doesn't matter how slow or fast it's going by. It's wasted.
True. And again...
Well, then I guess the only way to get around that would be, how do we find ways to utilize that time to our advantage? You've already established that you really don't give much fucks about this job. And so your desire to kind of have an output that is, you know, up to your level of, you know, standard and work ethic, you don't have to worry about that. You know, you can put in a piss poor effort and really not feel that bad if, you know, something just don't get done. Because, you know, like you said, it's like the office idiot manages to do something halfway, you know, close to what they're supposed to be doing it consistently, and it damn near gets a parade. Meanwhile, you're out there beating your head against the wall trying to make miracles happen on the daily, and that just sort of becomes the norm.
Yeah.
Where it's like you're the one holding up, you know, three quarters of a building, and this person sort of comes by and makes the most minimal of efforts, and people are like, oh my god, did you see what, you know, Gary the window licker did? I mean, oh my god, I can't believe he managed to send that email without swallowing his mouse again. I can't believe that's amazing. Good for him.
Look, you know, over there, he is just chewing on that wire again.
I think essentially, you know, what we're saying to you, Samantha, is just give up.
Quit now. Just walk out. Just say fuck it.
Set the
Who
place
cares?
On fire. You know, cover it in gasoline.
I just wanted my
throw
tapered.
The match. Walk out.
Take your swing line stapler.
I told them if they put me in the basement again,
well,
I was going to burn the building down.
I like doing good work. I like having my name associated with reliability and trustworthiness and good work. And that's where it gets hard for me, because
and
I genuinely don't care, but I care that my name is on something.
Agreed.
Yeah, but your name is on something associated with a company that
you don't give two shits
about me.
Yeah.
Well, they don't give two shits about you.
If I walked out and quit, they would replace me the next day.
Yep.
Exactly. So,
and then with this culture that we've created now, I feel bad complaining about my job because there's a lot of people struggling, and like I've been through that struggle too. But just like, we all have something we want to be doing. I don't know.
Sam, don't ever feel bad about complaining about your job, because one way or the other, those who have a job, if they love it, then they are of a very small percentile. And those who have one, for the most part, all wish they could complain a hell of a lot more about their job, but don't. And a lot of the times that leads to their own mental distress. Don't ever feel bad about complaining about work, because, let's face it, work sucks. It really does. That's the difference between a passion and a job. If you have a passion and you're doing your passion and you're getting paid for your passion enough to hold your ground, then you are a very, very lucky motherfucker and will tend not to complain at all. If you have a job, you will be working that job and you will probably hate it. Even if you're really good at it, you will eventually grow to hate it. And that's just the nature of it. Unfortunately, we're not creatures built to do the same repetitious thing over and over and over again. We're not, you know, perfect cogs that are meant to move in a certain way all the time. I mean, especially for people who have any kind of creative, you know, steps inside of them, those people will always be the ones who want to get the hell away from a daily grind the most, because we would rather be doing anything else. And I mean, even literally, people who are not creative, there's hundreds upon hundreds of people right now that I work with that haven't a creative bone in their body, but they love to play video games a hell of a lot more than they love showing up to work. And one of them so much so that he actually quit his job because he wanted to wait in line for the new fucking Xbox. But, follow your passion, bro. Follow your passion. But it's, you know, I mean, that's the thing. Unfortunately, we're all kind of stuck in this position. However, ask anybody who's homeless, there are always options. You just may not really enjoy it.
And I don't know if some of this is just coming from a little bit of burnout, because I do my work at work, and like I've already established, you know, I like to do good work. You know, I don't like to just slack off. So I go to work and I work. I'm working for IABD while at work and when I get home. And then, you know, I'm writing for myself. I'm auditioning for things, and I'm on doing something all day long. And then, you know, I've got to, it's just, I don't know if it's, if a lot of this is just coming from a little bit of burnout.
That's fair. And honestly, you might just be overbooking yourself at this point. And I know that work has definitely got to be a massive strain, especially considering the fact that you're happening to do a managerial job, which you've expressed zero desire to do.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from that in and of itself, there is a lot to be said for overclocking oneself. I mean, following your passion is important. Following your dreams is important. But know that when it becomes too much, one or the other has to dial back. And if that means walking up to your boss and saying, hey, I'm not going to be this fucking manager for you. I'm going back to my cubicle. You just figure it the fuck out because I'm out, dude. I'm going to go back. I'm going to do the work I do. It's going to be amazing. You're going to want to keep me around, but I am done being a manager stand-in.
But does that potentially take away opportunities from her?
But then again, you're thinking about opportunities in a company that you may or may not give a shit about. I mean, more money is nice, but
see, not necessarily, because what if she does a great job for her current manager and that manager knows of a job at a different company that Samantha would be perfect for?
It's a potential, but it's a shot in the dark.
It is, but I mean, I don't know the industry. I know my industry,
right, of
and
course.
I know that it works that way in my industry.
Right, in your
and
industry.
And I can't imagine that other industries don't have similar, not the exact same thing,
right,
but, you know.
And that's always a possibility, but again, that's something that has to be considered. It's like, how bad do you want to try to move in a different direction, or how bad do you want to just show up, do your job, go home?
And at what point do you say, sorry, Jim.
That's good.
At what point do you say, fuck it, I only have so much time on this planet. I want to pursue my passion and see what happens. Take a year. Mm-hmm. Focus completely on the writing or whatever it is that she wants to do, because she now has this to fall back on.
Right.
And if at the end of that year nothing has happened, she can go back to it.
True.
And say without any hesitation that I tried. I pursued every avenue to try and get this thing, that get my dream kickstarted, essentially.
Right. Again, those are always possibilities, but again, like any choice to be taken, there are consequences that need to be considered. You know, I mean, for me, I can't do that because I need medical insurance. My wife's work does not offer it. So in order for me to be able to just say, fuck it, I'm out for a year, I would not only lose my seniority, but I would lose every other advantage I have. They don't do pensions anymore. I managed to get in just before they cut it off. So I have a pension right now. If I quit and come back a year later, I lose that.
You know, I love how you made this about you when this is about Samantha.
Well, again, we're talking
about
shitty days.
In general, this is about everybody. This is not just my time. It's just, I brought up the topic.
Right.
We can talk about whatever job.
It's
not,
he just wants to be a jackass. But, you know, I mean, that's the thing, though. I wish I could be able to do something like that. But again, being responsible means that, unfortunately, in my case scenario, that's not an option I can jump into. I mean, that's why my wife and I always talk about, well, if I win the lottery, fuck yeah, it's on. I can buy insurance that'll handle us. I don't give a shit at that point. But that's the main thing holding me back from saying, fuck it, I'm out. And that's where it's at. That's why I have to take that and go, okay, well, since that's not an option, this is the best course of action I can do, which is keep the job, work at the bottom, and you know what? It's a little bit liberating at the bottom because the responsibility is a lot less.
So I think what you're saying to Samantha is find yourself a sugar daddy so
Dude,
you can
seriously.
Hang off for a year.
Find you somebody who won't take care of you.
I was really close to that. You guys have no idea. Hot black guy? Yeah. Probably should have just married him.
Seriously,
probably.
You fucked up. Like,
I did.
Marry
him,
you
then
need to know
divorce
that.
Him and take half his shit.
Right?
I don't know. He's got a really, really big penis. I don't know if I can divorce that.
Well, why did you leave that?
Yeah, I mean,
partial
he all but he all but offered, you know, he's like, hey, I'm moving to Cleveland. I got this job lined up and I'm starting at this amount and it's more than double what I make now.
You know, I happen to know of a guy that if you sleep with him like, one time, he'll pay you at least $130,000 to shut up about it.
You know, there are always choices.
Just throwing that out there.
There are always other endeavors to be gathered. But again, that's the thing. When it comes to choices and feeling trapped, never feel trapped. Just know that when you assess your situation, you do it from the point of view of knowing every possible consequence that you could foresee and then see the best course of action to proceed from there. And unfortunately, that usually is where we start feeling stuck. But at the same time...
The main frustration stems from, like what Samantha was saying, you have a sense of work ethic and everything else, and you know you want to put out the best possible product that you can. But having loyalty and hard work to a company that doesn't have any loyalty back is just a waste of energy and a waste of time. Like you basically turn into Dante from Clerks, where you know you're showing up on your day off and you're doing a job that is crushing your soul, but then you get to the point where you tell the story about how you would rather shit your own pants than move, and shit comfortably.
Right, Jim. By the way,
Jim, is the ice cream man nearby?
Did you kidnap the ice cream man?
Yeah, you guys remember a game called what was it with
Twisted Metal?
Twisted Metal, yes.
Is Sweet Tooth rolling down the street?
Yeah, buddy. Yeah, Sweet Tooth is pulling up right now. We're going to go cause some havoc.
Nice.
So what Jim is saying is wrap this shit up. I've got some carnage to do.
Yeah, carnage and ice cream.
In a sense, you know.
I'm going to go get some ice
cream. Because that's all life is about, carnage and ice cream. Get it?
Yes.
Oh, shit. Well done. That's the name of the episode.
Carnage and ice cream.
There you go.
Because that's all you need in life. A little bit of carnage, a lot of ice cream.
I feel so bad that this isn't like a funnier episode.
Well, that's what happens when you take the reins, Sam.
Well,
you know, it's
see,
okay.
Here's the thing
I know,
about
this
show.
I'm such a Debbie Downer. I'm sorry.
here's the beauty of this
More
show.
More like a sad Samantha.
Nice.
Sad Samantha.
Aww.
Hashtag sad.
The beauty of this show is that every episode doesn't have to be funny. The beauty of the show, and we've said it time and time again, it's for the four or five of us, whenever Bryce decides
to grace us
with his fucking presence, is getting together and venting, whether it be about shit that's pissing us off, or we're just here to make each other laugh, whatever it is, it's therapy.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. It's a time for all of us to come in and
get our
Let
shrinkage
go
on.
Of the rest of the world, and like Danny said, get a shrinkage on.
You know, like jumping into a cold pool on a hot day. Just,
well,
good stuff.
Interestingly enough, that you should bring up therapy. I have something that I have kind of been sitting on for a while, and I haven't actually mentioned or even spoken of that much to almost anybody. But it's been well documented over, the course of my interactions with all of you and just about anybody that knows of me from the radio days or the podcasting days. I drink a lot, quite excessively. And my drinking had gotten to a point where it really was noticeably out of control, even by my own parameters. And so I took it upon myself to look into seeing what kind of assistance I could get via my insurance to sort of see what options that I had. And so subsequently, I have been going to an intensive outpatient or IOP group, and we meet 3 days a week for 2 hours at a time. And it's not just for alcohol, it's for, drugs as well. And so we sit in a group, and it's like a support group where we all sit around and we talk about what's going on in our lives, what triggers that we have, what causes us to kind of, go to certain extremes and things like that. And I made this decision of my own free will and everything else. And so I went and I met with a guy, and we did like an intake interview. And he's asking me, he's just like, so how much would you say you drink? I'm like, how much do you have? Because I will drink what you have. And then I'll probably end up stealing some money from you and going and buying more, you know, because it's, he's like, seriously, like, you know, would you say you have like 2 to 3 drinks? I'm like, more. He's like, all right, 5 to 7 drinks? I'm like, more. He's like, okay, 10 or more drinks? Because that's really as high as this form goes. I'm like, yeah, we'll say 10 or more. He's like, well, how often would you say you do that? You know, is that like 3 or 4 times a week? I'm like, probably more than that. And so he's like, okay, well, you're going to have to go through, you know, a detoxing situation. And you can either do that 1 or 2 ways. You can do it on your own, which, considering the amount that you drink, is bordering on the cartoonish. I mean, if you were a U.S. senator, probably be a little bit more acceptable. But seeing as you're basically just kind of like an unemployed comedian, maybe going to the hospital might be more up your alley. And that scared the shit out of me, to be perfectly honest. I'm like, I'm not going to go to the hospital for this. I'm going to just sort of ride it out myself. And I had like a good 3 days where it was kind of like train spotting, you know, like with like the I couldn't sleep. I couldn't, you know, I was shaking. Like, it was bad. It was like, I'm not even going to lie. But I got through it. And I've been sober since April 2nd.
Nice.
Haven't had a drink. Haven't had an urge to drink. And the thing is, so I'm sitting in with these groups, and first day I get there and I'm terrified and I am fucking hung over. Cause I mean, every person that's about ready to go into a treatment sort of thing like that, we all do the exact same thing, which is the night before, like, is like the last hurrah. You just tie one on as hard as, you know, as fully as you can. And I sure as shit did that. And I brought like 2 Powerades with me because I needed to rehydrate so desperately. And so I'm sitting there and like I walk in the room and there's all these other people there. And they all kind of knew each other because they've been, you know, going to these meetings for a while. And I'm sitting up by myself and I got no idea what to expect. And I'm terrified. And like I'm just sweating vodka through my pores. Like, it's, you know, how in like the cartoons where you were like in when you're like on a hot day and you can kind of see the heat kind of like reflecting off of like the ground and shit.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of like the waves of vodka just kind of coming through my, I had like this like shimmering aura mm-hmm. about me of just my body processing all this shit. And I was convinced that they were going to kick me out because they're like, oh, we can tell you're still drinking or whatever. And even though that was like my first day, but by the time that meeting was over with, I was like, okay, that's really not how this whole thing kind of works. And like, we had people in there that like they had problems with marijuana. They had problems. A lot of it was heroin because of the opioid epidemic here in Pennsylvania. It's all over the place, but specifically in Pennsylvania, heroin is just off the chart. Heroin here is what meth is in like Oregon and various other states. But
don't worry. Eventually, you guys will get meth.
Right. You'll upgrade.
It is here, but it's not as prevalent, I would say. Like, there's not as many, I don't see as many tweakers, though we do have a few here and there. But by the time that first week was over, like, I look forward to going to these sessions, because it's like, we have so much fucking fun, because we're all fucked up. We're all like this island of misfit toys, and, you know, it's the most real talk I have with anybody. When you're there with a bunch of other people at rock bottom, it kind of, it's very freeing. And the stories that people will tell is just fucking, just incredible. We laugh and we bust each other's balls, and it's like, but it's also, it's a very healing situation. And so it's, you know, I've been doing therapy like once a week with another counselor. They call me Jimmy Two Shrinks over here because I got 2 shrinks.
Nice.
Extra shrinkage. But,
yeah, oh, total shrinkage. It's almost non-visible by the naked eye. But it's, you know, it's strange because I'm the only one there that doesn't have a parole officer, that doesn't have any kind of a court date either looming or anything else like that. We had one woman that was there for a while, and she was doing work release, where she would spend her evenings at the prison, and then the morning she'd get up and she'd be transported from the prison to her job at Fuddruckers. And she would work at Fuddruckers all day, and then at the end of her shift, she'd get picked up and driven back to the prison. And she'd, you know, just, you know, spend her evenings there. And she was working out that the majority of her her sentence. And she had, like, just about 50 days left before she was going to get released. And she was in for heroin possession and sales. And she was, you know, to hear her talk, she really had learned that this is not the life that she wanted. You know, she by age 30, she had bought a house. You know, she had a great job. She had, you know, a couple of dogs. She was, you know, working towards starting a family. And then she started fucking around with pills. And the next thing, you know, like, in, she said, like, in 2 years, everything was gone except for a futon that she bought at IKEA. And that's the only thing that she had left from all that she had neither sold or was taken away to pay for fines and charges and everything else. And that futon was, like, in her mom's house, and that's where she was living. And, you know, she was so humbled by that whole experience. And really, she had a great personality about the whole thing. And she was very open. And then one day, she came in, like she normally does. And, you know, we're all talking and everything else. And she goes and leaves to go to the bathroom or whatever. And we're talking for a while. And slowly, I kind of realized, like, she's been in there for a while. And then one of the other staff members comes in and whispers something to Bob, the guy who was running the session. And then the woman comes over and collects up all of, her name is Jen, all of Jen's belongings, and then she left. And we thought maybe there was some issue with, like, her parole officer or something like that. Turns out she shot up in the bathroom and OD'd. And if one of the staff members hadn't found her, she would have died.
Fuck.
And so they luckily on the premises, the whole building is just designed for therapy and drug and alcohol counseling. And so they had a shot of adrenaline on hand, and luckily John Travolta was there, and, you know, they drew a little spot on her chest, and she flink, you know, a little stab to the chest, and, like, brought her back to life. And you know, now tragically, she's back in prison. She's got a hell of a lot more charges that she has to be responsible for.
Fuck.
She was 50 days from getting out. You know, when she was going to get out, like, the manager at her job was like, you know, we're going to give you promotion. Like, she had everything going for her. And then in the blink of an eye, she made this horrible decision, and all of that's gone now. So to sort of tie it into what all we were talking about, one of the things that I when I walk away from one of these sessions is, it isn't so much a sense of, like, well, things could always be worse, even though things really could always be worse.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, much like this podcast is, this is like a sense of camaraderie where we come together and we can vent and bust each other's balls and kind of really just be real and honest with one another about how things are going. And there's a great book, there's a great series of books, actually, by an author by the name of Spider Robinson. And he writes about this bar, ironically enough, called Callahan's. And it's this bar that is run by an alien that you don't find out until later. But,
thanks for the spoiler alert, dicks.
It's this magical bar that people can only find when their life has thoroughly hit, like, the worst possible moment. Like, the main character in all these books kind of wanders in because his wife and daughter were just in a car accident, and he had fixed the brakes because he had replaced the brakes on the car, but he did it wrong. And so they were driving somewhere, the brakes failed, they got into this accident, and they died. Now, this is a comedy book. I'm not even kidding. The whole thing, I mean, literally, like, the kind of book that you're reading and you're laughing out loud like a mental patient because it's written so well.
Do you but usually laugh so many at car wrecks where families all die, Jim?
Jim? Oh, yeah. What? Dude, he thinks they're funny. The funniest thing ever.
Hilarious.
I got a library. Fuck yeah. But, like, the drinks are all, like, a dollar or 50 cents or whatever. And so but the underlining message of this place is shared pain is diminished. And that's really kind of what it comes down to. Like you guys were saying about how, well, you know, if you talk to a homeless person, they'll always let you know that there are other options on the table. And those options may not be the ones that you want to go for, but they're always there.
Right.
to be able to share that amongst people that you know can will listen to you and not just kind of give you like a head nod or whatever and just offer really nothing in return.
Right.
That at least can give you some sense of release in that you're getting it out of you, A, and B, when that person comes back to you with problems, you can help them out. So it's a cathartic mentality, and you kind of you help each other kind of get to that next point. And like I'm talking to people that they're literally at the very, very bottom, you know, and all I'm trying to, and like they're trying to find jobs and places to live. And, you know, they, some of them are living in shelters. Like it's heartbreaking, you know, but at the same time, they've got hope and they've got like a reason to want to be there and to fix the mistakes that they made and to, you know, just not necessarily the mistakes that they made, but the situations that they're in. And so, moving forward, I know the feeling when you're staring at a situation and you feel like, well, I just can't get any worse. Or maybe not, it can't get any worse, but you're like, it just feels like there's no hope to kind of get to someplace better. You know, there's always that possibility. But sort of continuing to stare into that abyss and feel a certain way about it isn't going to change anything. There has to be action installed. And I know it's not always easy to know what that change is or how it's supposed to be enacted, but sometimes just the simple action of verbalizing it with somebody else will be enough to kind of get that ball of progress rolling. And sooner or eventually you get to a point where you don't feel as weighed down by all the shit that's around you, and you feel inspired to find someplace better to be in your life, either financially or romantically or, you know, mentally or spiritually or anything else. You know, it works on all different levels, and that's kind of what I'm working through therapy wise with this whole thing. So I just want to make Samantha feel not as bad about being a downer. I wanted to see if I could bring it a little bit lower.
Just bringing that bar down, guys. Just fucking put that shit down. I love it. Well, good job, buddy.
You know, even though we're not going through the same stuff, we both still have an air of hope at the end, because you have to take action. And, you know, I'm taking action outside of work. Like, we're doing stuff. But, you know, it you know, we have networks where we're starting to get interest from sponsors, and like things are happening, which makes it even harder to be at work, because I'm like, oh my God, this needs to happen now. We need, So it's just, it's an excitement, but the excitement makes me hyper aware of, if this doesn't work out, this is where I'm stuck.
Well, and Danny and I have kind of the same thing, because we've had, in this last month, we've had a lot, well, not a lot, but we've had interest in our music. We've posted some songs, and there's been an acceptance, and we've seen our essentially the interest in the band go from just the guys who are in the band to quite a few people in a very short amount of time. Right. So it's like now there's an anticipation building with us. It's like, if we keep this momentum building, what is the next thing that will happen? What do we need to push this project forward? Mm-hmm. But I don't think we've ever looked at it from like the outside, or like, wouldn't it be cool if this happened or this happened? It's always, what can we do to get to the next stage of what we envision for this?
Well, and again, it's one of those things where, especially with music in general, you know, starting off in the band with my buddies, I mean, it was literally a place for us to go and blow off steam by playing instruments. Mm-hmm. So it was this only with music and just hanging out. That turned into something more once we actually started developing music that we actually liked, that, hey, this sounds really cool, let's keep playing that. So, I mean, a lot of us in the band are still in the mentality that this is just our weekly therapy. The idea that we actually have some people outside of us, well, at the time, us five, you know, well, and still at this point, but aside from us five that actually know we exist and actually want to hear more from us, it does kind of give you a moment of, oh, Well, damn. Okay, cool. So this is could actually go somewhere. But at the same time, I think we're still stuck in the thought of, nah, it ain't fucking going anywhere. It's okay. Because even if it doesn't, even if it doesn't go anywhere beyond getting our songs recorded, cleaned up, sent out into the ether, and nobody ever buys them or even looks at them twice, there is a sense of accomplishment that comes with saying, my mark in history is there.
There's a sense of pride.
Yeah. And especially considering that it is something that was born out of, you know, five guys hanging out together and putting something down, and that is us. It will exist long past us. So long as the internet exists, so shall our music. So shall we as we are. But, and that's really the only thing I have that makes me happy about the band in general, is I know that even if we don't become famous, and I'm fairly certain that we won't, somebody somewhere many, many years after I'm long gone might find it by accident. You know, they might be down the rabbit hole on YouTube because it's the oldest format of, you know, video watching out there, and they think it's funny. And they'll come across me. Just like I came across Robert Johnson, you know? Up until I was 31 years old, I didn't even know the motherfucker existed. And then I heard about him, and I was like, oh, this is the guy who supposedly sold his soul to the devil for blues fame.
Yeah.
And I learned about him, and I heard his music, and I listened to every one of his songs, and I was like, you know what? Aside from being slightly repetitious, dude had some skill. But it's like, hearing his music now, almost like 80 years after he was dead, keeps him alive, keeps him going, and people who still love him keep him alive. And if absolutely nothing else, I get to say with this band that who I was, who I am, will be eternal. It's the only form of immortality I get, and I'm okay with that. And again, there is a hard sense of pride in what I do. I may have to go through the daily grind at work every day, but you know what? When Friday or Sunday come along, I get to hang out with my boys, play some music, record it, get it cleaned up. It sounds fucking great. Throw it out into the ether. Well, guess what? Check marked in time. Jim, every time you've posted up a video of your stand-up, you've been check marked in time. Sam, every time you've been on your podcast show, done anything in general that has some, you know, a video stamp to it or sound stamp. Every time you guys were on this show, even though nobody, well, no, one person listens to this. Two people listen to this show. That's our timestamp. We were here. This is who we are. And this is what we hope to become by being better than we are. So when we come here and we, you know, voice about how much work pisses us off or the troubles and things that we're going through, the beauty part about it is people who actually would listen to this will get to see our growth with us. And maybe somewhere down the road might help somebody else down the line and say, hey, you know, I'm going through the exact same fucking thing. You know what? Yeah. I'm going to take care of some business. And in that, we do something wonderful. We do something great, not just for each other, but for somebody we've never met or possibly will never know. And that's the cool thing about coming together like this and doing something that is important to us, to feel like we get to vent and feel like we get to get this stuff off our chest, because we're not the only one. You know, a buddy of mine said if there weren't so many cliches, well, it's because not as many people would have them, you know? It wouldn't be a cliche. Yeah. But at the same time, it's relevant. And I'm just thankful I get to be a part of this.
See, I'm sorry. I just want to say the lust for immortality is something that I think a lot of people have. Because it's the fear of death being what it is. Like Samantha's saying that there's only so much time that we have while we're these versions of talking meat. Until, you know, once the meat fails and the spirit has to go someplace else, what happens after that? Like, and the idea that, you know, having these moments while we're here, kind of just being dropped in the ocean and just sort of dissolving into the nothingness of time is terrifying. But what I see, and Dan kind of really touched on it a lot, was, you know, things that you don't realize are affecting other people. They do. And even if you're not around, or, you know, either physically, or, you know, if you've passed on to the next level of whatever, if you're still spoken of, if your lessons that you taught someone else, either directly or indirectly, are being shared, then there's a level of immortality there. You know, not all of us will be Shakespeare's or Beethoven's or, you know, Keanu Reeves. Like, we won't always be that level of, you know, eternal.
Interesting comparison, buddy, but all right, I'm with you.
That's how it goes. It goes, you know, Jesus Christ. Well, it goes Roddy Piper, Jesus
Beethoven.
Christ. Yeah.
Ted, Beethoven, Theodore Keon. Logan.
Yeah.
The trifecta. That's right, really right, the Holy Trinity right
that's
there.
That's all you need.
You know, no, I mean, the people in my life who I've lost, I try to keep, you know, their spirit alive by sharing the things that they instilled in me, because I want that change in me to you know, help better me continuously for, you know, the rest of my days. And then by sharing them, that to me keeps that memory, that spirit close to me, and, you know, still, you know, existing on this plane of existence. So
I can dig it.
Yeah.
Well, with those wise words, we come to another close of another episode. And, you know, I'm glad I put the call out for therapy, because I feel like you all needed this.
Every
crisis
day.
Counselors are available at notanotherpodcast.com.
All of our Not Another Counselors.
Don't rely on those fuckers. Their lives are all about carnage and ice cream.
Yes, carnage yeah. and ice cream.
So hopefully next week things will be better and we can come in and make each other laugh. And if not, we'll come
Fuck
in
you.
Here and hold each other and sing Kumbaya.
I'm okay with that too. Yeah, no grabbing my ass this time without
fires,
winning.
Sing a few songs.
Have a few laughs.
Worst case, we'll just burn this fucker down.
Do I amuse you?
I just want to see the world burn.
And with Bane.
Well, Alfred impersonation. Horrible. Just horrible.
You were saying Alfred's words, but you sounded like Bane.
Yeah, I heard Bane too.
To come across.
There are some people who just want to see the world burn.
Now you're trying to do Sean kind of Connery.
Yeah, ooh, Sean yeah.
Bane Connery.
Ooh, Bane Connery. Oh, there's a sequel that needs to happen.
Right?
As Batman Bond.
Sean Connery.
Sean Connery as Bane as Bond.
Ooh.
Bane! Sean Bane! Bane.
Not stirred.
All right, because my dogs are getting antsy, so I got to get going.
Fine.
Okay, kids, thanks for joining us on Not Another Therapy Session. We will see you next week.
Nothing but love, y'all.
Bye. Love y'all.
Thank you for listening to Not Another Podcast. There are so many places for you to find us outside of www.notanotherpodcast.com. For instance, you can find us on Facebook at Not Another Podcast. You can also find us on Tumblr at www.notanotherpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also find me, Samantha Stark, on Twitter at SamanthaStark3. And you can find James on Twitter as well under James Spooky, spelled with an I-E, not A-Y. And you wanted it, you asked for it, you got it. You can also find us now on iTunes under, you guessed it, Not Another Podcast. We'll talk to you soon. Peace out, Not Another Podcasters.